be dissuaded from our desire to be part of the faith, to be part of the people. And we learn from there that even though you're supposed to discourage a convert, if the convert really is very stubborn and very persistent, then you're supposed to ultimately leave the convert alone, and you're supposed to accept the convert into the Jewish faith. We derive that from the pasuk "Vatayrich Misamesis Hilalechas Sitava Tachdal Ledaber Eleha." Rav the Rambam in Hilchos Yisurei Bia Perek Yud Gimel Perek Yud Dalet is where he codifies these halachos. The Rambam brings that pasuk as the proof that once the convert is insistent upon not being discouraged, then it becomes a mitzvah really to perform the conversion. And the poskim talk about the nature of the mitzvah, because the Gemara says shehuya mitzvah lo mashinan, that once the convert demonstrates their absolute faith and sincerity, then you're not supposed to delay the conversion because it's a mitzvah. So where do we get this idea of the mitzvah from the Torah? So there are different opinions about what the mitzvah is. Some say that the mitzvah is v'aftem esager, that the mitzvah is we are supposed to love the convert. And it doesn't only mean loving the convert after the convert is already Jewish, but it means that if you see that somebody is genuinely, the Riyah Bar Galoni says this, if you see that the convert is genuinely sincere, then Vavtem Es Ager means that the mitzvah of loving the convert means even when they're still in their candidacy stage, but they demonstrate their sincerity, that you have a mitzvah to convert them as quickly and as expeditiously as possible. And others say that it's the mitzvah is v'yavta l'recha kamocha. And others say that because if you wanted so badly, you are Jewish and you wanted so badly to convert, you would want to be helped along, presumably. And the third opinion, which is developed upon by Rav Yerucham Perle in his commentary to the Sefer Mitzvos of Psajigon. Psajigon wrote a little poem, which I think is called like the Asarot. People wrote little poems that refer to all of the Tarjag Mitzvos. It's not something which is known about or studied so much anymore, but there were a whole bunch of these things. So Psajigon's is one of the few that's really extant, that really survived. And in Rav Sajigon's Sarot, so it's a very short poem, but Rav Yerucham Perle develops Kol HaTorah Kula from this small little poem of showing all the Tarjag Mitzvos that were being alluded to and then having elaborate discussions upon them. So he has elaborate discussion in which he brings the approach that the mitzvah of converting somebody who really is a sincere convert is Avas Hashem. It's that you demonstrate your love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu by bringing people closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu who yearn to have a closer and stronger connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that is a fundamental part of what Geirus is all about.
And what about, you know, in most systems, there's an extensive training program that can be quite a delay.
So we don't just necessarily convert somebody the first day that they show up. So that is what Tosfos points out in the Yevamos and Daf Kuftes. Tosfos points out that the Gemara there says that bad things will happen to those who accept converts. So he says, what's going on over here? Is it a mitzvah or is it some sort of an evil thing? So the answer is it's a double-edged sword. So Tosfos says that when is it going to be a bad thing? It's a bad thing if you either proselytize, that you run after people and you try to convince them to convert. That's not something that we believe in. We believe that a ger has to come of their own accord, that we're not supposed to do outreach in order to pressure or persuade people to convert to Judaism. It's perfectly okay, right? Not to be Jewish. As the Rambam paskins, you could be a righteous Gentile and still have a place in the world to come. It's okay. But the second explanation that Tosfos gives in Yevamos is that Ra Achara Tavol Makab LeGerim refers to a situation where you accept the ger too quickly, that you don't go through the whole review and preparation process of ensuring that the ger is truly and fully committed and knows what they're getting into and is prepared to really accept all of the yoke of commandments, and that you also take some time to test their mettle by trying to talk them out of it, trying to discourage them. So that's an important part of the process. And if you don't have that, says Tosfos, so then not only have you not fulfilled the mitzvah, but you actually have done something which is very harmful, which is very detrimental. In fact, there's a statement in the Gemara that says, It's called Rabbi Chelbok. The Gemara quotes Rabbi Chelbok, says Kashim Gerim Lisakis Apachas, that Gerim are as damaging to the Jewish people as a wart on the skin. That doesn't sound very complimentary. So there are different explanations as to what exactly that means. In what way are the Gerim like a wart on the skin? We just said it's a big mitzvah to bring people into Judaism who are sincere, to have them enter Tachas Kanfei HaShechina. So when did it become like a wart on the skin? So it depends. Rashi says that not all of them remain sincere and committed, that you have a lot of backslidings. If a person began with a certain orientation towards life and then they make a change, sometimes the change doesn't stick and they go back to their previous ways. And Tosfos says because the Shechina is not, that they're not considered to be miyuchasim, and the Shechina doesn't automatically reside upon those who are gerim. Tosfos then brings another explanation from Rabbi Avraham Ger. Rabbi Avraham Ger was himself a convert. Rav Soloveitchik used to say that from this reference in Tosfos, we see that a ger can be a rav. A ger can receive smicha because Tosfos quotes Rabbi Avraham Ger. This was a question that was posed when I was the dean at Yeshiva, in Yeshiva Rabbeinu Yitzchok Elchanan. So we had more and more candidates. I wouldn't say that we had a giant proliferation, but there were a number of students who had undergone a gear. Sometimes it was a gear of the chumrah. Sometimes it turned out that they discovered that the mother had a conservative conversion. They were raised Jewish. They became Talmidei Chachamim, and they joined the smicha program. So the question was that there's a halacha that says that when it comes to any kind of a sroah, when it comes to any kind of position of authority, that there has to be mikarev achecha. It has to be from the people who were born Jewish. And the Gemara in Kiddushin derives that any position of sroah, of authority, a public authority, is off limits to a ger. Like you have in the American Constitution that you can't become president, right? If you're not a naturalized American citizen when you're born, if you're not born in America.
Naturalized is not
good. You have to be born in America. I mean, there was some question about, you know, if you're born as a citizen elsewhere, maybe that's also a question. But certainly, if you don't have that citizenship at the beginning, so then you can't become president of the United States. So we understand it says also too, Som Tasim Alecha Melech, right? Mikarev Achecha, Lo Sufala Seis Alecha Ish Nachri. You're not allowed to appoint a foreigner. It has to be somebody from your own midst. So the Gemara derives Kol Mishin Mesimo She'ata. It said all of the positions of authority have to be Mikarev Achecha, and therefore Ger can't be appointed to that position. So what about Smicha? Is Smicha considered to be a position of authority that it would be off limits to a ger? So I asked. So they ask about Shmaya Rav Talia. That's even more serious because they were dayanim in the Sanhedrin, and to be in the Sanhedrin would seem like v'nasui tachim adomim lecha. That there seems to be a gzeiras hakasuv that they also have to be born Jewish. So there's a big kasha about Shmaya Rav Talia, and let's not get to that right now. There are lots of different answers given as to why they may have been exceptions to the rule, but they don't prove the rule. They may be the exception that proves the rule in the opposite direction. So I asked about whether what the practice is in terms of giving smicha to gerim, and Rabbi Chalap said that he had asked this question above Soloveitchik, and Rabbi Soloveitchik quoted this Tosfos from Rabbi Avraham Ger. He said if a ger could be one of the balei Tosfos, the Tosfos is quoting Rabbi Avraham Ger, then he can get smicha. He felt that being balei Tosfos yesh b'chlam masayim mona. If you get to be one of the balei Tosfos, so you certainly get to receive smicha. But that doesn't end the inquiry. It doesn't end the question there, because then you have to deal with the shaila. Okay, let's say that a ger receives smicha. What can he do with that smicha? Because if positions of public authority are off limits, it could be the ger receives smicha. Maybe he can give a shir, he can be a rebbe and a yeshiva. But in terms of having authority over the entire community, in terms of being a rav of a shtetl, in terms of being a communal rav of a shul, maybe that would be something that would be off limits. And in fact, there are chilukei deos about this. There are different opinions.
Moshe, for instance, says that no rav has any
shrara either. That's a question. He doesn't really say that with respect to Rabbanis. He says that with respect to being a Rosh Hashiva. He says if you're a Rosh Hashiva, so then you don't really have shrara because you're just giving shiurim, you're just governing the Tamidim. But Moshe Feinstein's definition of shrara is you tell the Balabatim what to do. That's why But Moshe Feigstein held that being a mashkiach is a position of svara. We don't necessarily think of it that way as such an exalted role. He says it doesn't necessarily have to be that everybody is bowing down to you when you enter the room. It means that you have the ability to boss around the balabatim and to tell the balabatim what to do. So he says the mashkiach has the right to tell the balabatim, I'm sorry, this dish became crepe and you have to throw it out. So that means you have, or you're not allowed to serve this food at your event because it doesn't meet our standards. So you can boss around the balabatim. Therefore, mashkiach is a position of sorara. He discussed that more in the context of whether a woman could become a mashkiach, because the Rambam learns that just like any position of sorara is off limits to a ger, the Gemara says. The Gemara doesn't say that explicitly with respect to a woman, but the Rambam learns the same thing with respect to a woman. But getting back to the question of a ger,
wheat's placement have a position?
Does Reet's placement have a position? In other words, if somebody was a ger, would Reet's placement place them in the shul? Is that, so that's the question that we're asking. That's exactly the question that we're discussing. So there's a Chiduke Deos about this. Rav Moshe says, with respect to a Rosh Yeshiva position, he says since a Rosh Yeshiva is not forcing around the Balabatim, he said if you have a very knowledgeable Rosh Yeshiva, so that who is eligible and worthy of being a Rosh Yeshiva, so then that ger could be appointed to be a Rosh Yeshiva. Now there are other poskim who said, well, we sort of hear what Rav Moshe is saying if you're giving a shir, but if you're in charge of the entire faculty and you're in charge of the hiring and the firing and doing all of those things, so that really does seem to be a position of Sorah. So there are others who are Michalik, and they say if it's a question of being like a Ramani yeshiva, so then that would be perfectly okay, but to be the head of the entire yeshiva, so that they said they were not as sure about. This is what some of the postings said.
What's the core for that reason altogether? Why you can't appoint somebody? What's the core for that? Is that
pasuk? A pasuk. It's a mikara v'checha. It's the same pasuk with respect to melech. Some to simulecha melech. Those who call it say salecha yishnach liyash or mikara v'checha. Those are the pasukim from which it is all derived. So Rav Moshe then brought another consideration, which is he asked about Shmaya Beavtalion. So he said that one explanation about Shmaya Beavtalion is that it could be that it wasn't a soror in the sense maybe they weren't appointed, it's just that they were so much better and more learned than everybody else that Mimela, it was obvious that they would be the heads of the Sanhedrin. So if you don't have to be appointed because you're obviously head and shoulders above everybody else, Meshechmo Lamala, from everybody else in terms of your Torah learning, so then Mimela, the person who just happens to be the clear choice and personality to serve in this capacity as Rosh Yeshiva. So therefore he gives that as another consideration. Maybe it's not considered to be a minoy. It's not considered to be an appointment if it just happens automatically by itself. So these are different questions that arise, but some of the Rav Asha Weiss has an extensive essay about this topic in terms of different sororos that could or cannot be available to a ger. And he concludes that as a general matter, it's probably better and you have less types of issues if you have a very worthy ger who is a Talmid Chacham, and it's a question of appointing him to be Rav of a shul, to have him serve as the assistant Rav of the shul, that there is somebody else who is technically over him, like the Rav Moshe had in the Mashkicha case where he was finding grounds to be Mako, that there was some Rishonim who hold that a woman could be appointed to a position of Sroor as long as it's not Melech or Malka. So he said that the Rambam holds that she's not allowed to have a position of Sroor. So just to cover our basis, if you have a really worthy woman who is a Yireah, who has Yireah Shemayim, she's Yireah Shemayim, and she needs the position for Parnasu. He was talking about an Amana whose husband had previously been the Mashkiach. So he writes that just to cover yourself, according to the Rambam, you should have somebody else who is appointed to be the supervisor, a Rav who's appointed to be the supervisor, even though she's really doing all of the work. It's just so you can get around that problem. So therefore, so Rav Weiss and others write similarly with respect to being an assistant Rav. Rav Yitzchak Yosef also has this in his Kunturus Hager, where he talks about halachas that are pertinent to Gerim, but Rav Asher Weiss does say that in a situation where you have a Kabbalah, you have an acceptance, you mentioned this, I heard a few moments ago, where it's not necessarily that you're imposing a person to serve in a position of authority, but everybody votes and they say, we want this individual to serve in that capacity. So he says that maybe there's more room to be makel in that situation. It happens to be a diyun, because The Chidah writes in his Shailos HaTshuvos to Yosef Omitz that even if you appoint somebody through a Bechira, that's still an appointment. So you got together and you voted, but at the end of the day, the person doesn't just automatically serve in this capacity. You have to show up at his doorstep and say, we hear a buyer offering you this position. It's still an appointment of authority. So therefore, not everybody necessarily agrees with this particular conclusion. Comes up as well in the form of other positions of a communal authority. Let's say we're not talking about being rav of a shul. Let's say we're talking, you could argue being rav of a shul, so you'll argue it's not really svara, the famous Gemara that talks about how Rama Gamliel wanted to appoint a couple of Tamidei Chachamim to a position of communal authority, of rabbinic authority, and they didn't want to show up because they were too embarrassed, because they were too humble, they were too modest. So he said, "Ah, you think that svara ni no semachem? Avdus ani no semachem. I'm giving you avdus. It's not really svara." But the reality is, of course it's Sarara, but the point is that even when we have Sarara, we have positions of authority, it's important for public servants to recognize that they are essentially servants to the community, that their Sarara is not for the purpose of self-aggrandizement, that their Sarara is for the purpose of serving the public. But it's still Sarara. That's just a description of how Sarara plays out in our Hashkafic universe. So that's not necessarily an argument to say that it doesn't constitute Sarara for these halakhic purposes. However, you could argue that being Rav is a form of Keser Torah, and Keser Torah is something which doesn't go Birusha, like Sraro would go Birusha, like the Ksam Sofer writes. Keser Torah just goes to whoever is the most worthy person. So maybe serving in that type of a capacity where it's purely based on Torah credentials, so that you would put that in a separate type of consideration than with respect to other positions. But what about serving as president of a shul? What about serving as president of a shul? So this is a shaila that does come up nowadays. In fact, there was a community, I believe, that became divided over this very issue, that some of the members wanted to appoint somebody to be president of the shul, but he was a ger, and others said, no, you can't have a ger as president of the shul, and it caused a major friction within the community, and I think that it ultimately may have actually split up the shul into different factions and led to a breakaway altogether. So this was a shaila that was asked for some reason of two different dayanim who were both in the Philadelphia Besdin. I don't think that it specifically involved the Philadelphia case, but it was brought to the attention of two different Philadelphia dayanim. One of them was Rav Aaron Felder, Zechron Levakam. One was Yibadul Chaim Tov, Sherefu Shlema, Rav Dov Aaron Brisman. And they both, I don't know if they wrote their tshuvas around the same time, but they both wrote tshuvas on this subject, coming out to diametrically opposite conclusions. So Rav Felder said, being a rav of a shul is svara, that you make, being president of a shul is svara. You make decisions, you get up and you have to make decisions regarding the management of the shul, regarding the administration of the shul, regarding policies and procedures of the shul. You certainly can tell people what to do. As he said, even though you have shul boards, very often the way that shuls actually run is that the boards are essentially honorific, but it's the president who really does everything by fiat, by himself. So he said, just looking at the reality of the situation, he thought it really was the position of Srara. And as far as the argument that maybe there's a vote by the membership, so it's really a papira, he quoted the Yosef Omitz of the Chidah, who said that that doesn't really make a difference. It's still considered to be an appointment. So therefore, he said that he thought it was completely off limits. Rav Dov Aaron Brisman, on the other hand, argued, very interestingly, that it does not constitute Srara, because he said you do have to look add to the fact that there is a shul board, and that at least as far as the protocols and the procedures of a shul are set up in terms of the shul constitution and their bylaws, it generally provides that the president is required to do things in consultation with the various boards and membership bodies and all of those things, and subcommittees and what have you. And therefore, he felt that it was not a position of Sarara really in the classical sense. Secondly, he pointed out that it doesn't last forever. The classical Sarara, you appoint somebody to a position and they stay there unless they really mess up. Even a rub of a shul, there's sort of an expectation of an indefinite period of time that the rub is going to be there unless something, you know, happens of a major tumultuous nature. But when it comes to presidents, they are specifically appointed for finite terms. So he felt that should be taken into consideration as well. And he brought a very interesting raya for his overall approach from a Gemara in Kiddushin that spoke about how there was like somebody was an innkeeper or perhaps a tenant, Ushbizichne, of Avada Barava, who was a ger, and who wanted a particular position of authority. I think it's in the Kiddushin Daf Ayin Zayin. He wanted a particular position of authority. This is all, by the way, just a hakdama to our topic. We haven't really gotten into the meat yet. This is, I'm giving you a hakdama regarding the attitude, a perspective of the type of positions the gerim can serve, and then we're going to speak about more the nitty-gritty of gerus. But in this particular case, so Rav Avda Bar Abba wanted a position of authority. I'm sorry, this ger wanted a position of authority, and Rav Avda Bar Abba was helping him out. He was helping him out. So it says in the end, he was able to provide an argument that this person, this ger, who was his Ushbizichne, should be appointed to a position of authority. On what basis? The Imam Yisrael. This is a very interesting answer. Because he himself was not the ger. His father was a ger, but his mother was born Jewish. So that doesn't sound like much of a ger. It means that he had some sort of a residual stature as a ger of coming from a family of gerim because his father was a ger. But since he himself wasn't born as a ger, so therefore there was no problem. It sounds like, however, had he been born as a ger, then he wouldn't have been able to be appointed to a position of authority. And here we were talking about somebody who would just oversee the dispensation of the water from the various wells to the fields and the community, things of that variety. Sararusa de Masa, as the Gemara says. And nonetheless, he needed to have Imam Yisrael. But then, the Gemara, as in the conclusion of the entire episode, says, oh, and not only Rav Avda Bar Abba was really solicitous about the welfare of Gerim, but there were others as well, like Rabbi Zera was Metapa, who really tried to help them out. So the question is, when it says Metapa Bahu, does that mean he tried to help out people who were like this individual, whose mother was Yisrael? Or does it mean, no, he tried to help out all Gerim? And the Meiri learns, this Sogyar to connote, that Metapa Bahu meant he tried to help out all Gerim to try to get them positions. The Meiri said, but how can you get a position of importance and authority for somebody who was a genuine, full-fledged ger who converted to Judaism himself, if we're not talking about somebody who was Imam Yisrael? So he says, because you would basically appoint them in such a way that they would be absorbed together with other individuals in terms of being appointed to leadership positions. So the Mi'ili sounds like he says explicitly that when you are dealing with a ger, it's okay to offer a position of some sort of authority within the community as long as it's blended together with other individuals who also have some say with respect to the decision-making process. So therefore, but Fisman said, I'm not making this up out of whole cloth. We find that there is some special inyan to help or to carve out positions for gerim along these lines. Why would there be some special inyan to carve out positions along these lines? We don't find that, per se, with respect to women. If you hold like the Rambam, that Sarara positions are off limits to women, we don't have a sugya in the Gemara that says, oh, Metapa Bahu, we're going to try to find leadership positions for women. We don't find that, per se. So why would there be some special inyan specifically with respect to gerim? So Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva. This is in, I think, Yoredeya Chelek Dalet Simen Chobab, where Rav Moshe Feinstein has that tshuva we were talking about regarding appointing a ger to be a Rosh Yeshiva. And Rav Moshe starts off the tshuva saying, why am I going to work so hard to come up with svaros, according to halacha, to justify having the ger serve in this capacity? So he says, based on the imperative, and this is how we started out and why this is an appropriate segue, based on the imperative of Vav Temes Ager. He says, loving the ger means that love that you try to provide for those types of needs and desires that the ger has to be fully integrated within the community. So if part of the ger's need to be fully integrated into the community is to be able to assume this type of a leadership role, then you try to the best of your ability. If you can't, you can't, obviously. You're limited by the halacha, but you try within the parameters and the framework of the halacha to find a way in which it can work to appoint a ger in some fashion to the relevant position. So that is another manifestation on the other end of the spectrum of Avtemes Agir. So we see that on some level it is present at the beginning of the process in terms of ensuring that somebody who really is determined to become Jewish and is prepared to accept the prerequisites of it being a ger should be brought in to the fold as quickly as possible. And we also find that it manifests itself as well in terms of making sure that there are the abundance and requisite opportunities available for the ger after the ger has converted to enable the ger to feel like a full-fledged member of the community. Now, the question we have to ask then is, okay, so we've explained sort of the parameters of the mitzvah. So mitzvah of facilitating a conversion for sincere converts, and there's a mitzvah of making sure that we continue to provide for the ger afterwards in terms of addressing all of the needs of the ger and enabling them to become integrated to the fullest degree possible within the parameters of the halacha, okay? But then the question is, okay, all of that is fine and good, but what are the ritual components of bringing somebody in to the into Klal Yisrael? What are the different stages and steps that are supposed to occur in order for this mitzvah to be performed properly, and how is that performed bizman hazeh? How do we have the jurisdiction, the authority, how is it supposed to be exercised in order, from a Beis Din perspective, to make sure that we are doing our job properly of bringing in those who should be converting or rejecting those who should not be converting, of ensuring that the conversions are valid and that we are treating the Geirim in the fashion in which they are supposed to be treated. Yes.
Do Jews have the ability to say, no, we will not accept Geirim or restore? I'm thinking of the Syrian community in New York.
So this is a big question.
Well known. They say, no, how about your Hafner? Can they say, Sheikh Al-Tas, say, no, we're not going to fulfill?
Okay, so let us file that question away for the time being, but that's one of the questions that we're going to have to deal with, which is, assuming it's a mitzvah, let's say I have a mitzvah to do something, so I don't get to call the shots per se. If I have a mitzvah, I have an obligation, I'm supposed to observe Yontif, okay? Tomorrow night is Shavuos. So I don't have the opportunity to just to say, oh, well, that's nice, it's a mitzvah, but I choose not to do it this year. This year I think I'm going to skip Shavuos. No, I don't get to do that. Counting Spira, I don't get to say, oh, I'm just not going to count Spira. Well, if I do, I'm going to miss a day, and you know, then I won't be able to count with a bracha tomorrow. So I can't change the halakos, and I can't decide what mitzvos I'm going to observe when and when I'm not going to observe them. I have an obligation to do a mitzvah. So if this is a mitzvah, so do I ever have the prerogative to say, in our community, we're not going to accept Geirim? Or we are deciding that, you know, this particular candidate, we just don't like this person so much. So even though this is a sincere convert who really, in the worst possible way, wants to convert to Judaism, we're not going to let him in. So does the Beis Din have that type of prerogative, or is the Beis Din just a prop, so to speak, in terms of bringing about the mitzvah that, okay, once a ger is supposed to be converted, so then the Beis Din is just obligated institutionally to set things up as quickly as possible, and they don't have any further say regarding the rejection of the candidate. So all of this has to be explored. So let's look at page one here of contemporary issues, okay, in Jewish conversion, okay, and we'll spend the rest of today just going through the prerequisites and maybe the role of the Beis Din. All right, so the prerequisites, the Gemara in Krisis tells us, like we mentioned, Matan Torah is our paradigm. Matan Torah is our original template for conversion. And the Gemara says, Kavos kachem kavosechem, avosechem lo nikrasu lebris, ela b'milu tefila v'hartzos dam. Just like our forefathers had to have a bris mila, they had to have tefila immersion, and hartzos dam, they had to bring a korban. So too, these are the necessary components for conversion nowadays. So how do we know these different components? And Mila we know because it says with respect to those who left Egypt, Mitzrayim, we read this in the Haggadah, and we read this whenever we do a Bris Mila. So we know that there was a Bris Mila after the time of our exodus from Egypt before we received the Torah. How do we know that there was a Korban? As it says, they brought Kabbalah, so Yishlakas Narei B'nei Yisrael. And let's feel them in all. And how do we know that they immersed? Because it says that with respect to the Korban, Meikach Moshe Chatzi Adam Meizrok Ala Amen Azayah Wel Tefillah, says that Moshe sprinkled blood on everybody, and we have a tradition that the Gemara derives that whenever there's sprinkling, there also was immersion. So we know that everybody immersed. And then the Gemara asks the question, wait a second, but of those three components, we don't do all three nowadays. We do two of them. I mentioned two of them to you. I mentioned Mila, I mentioned Tefillah. I didn't mention anything to you about bringing a Korban. So how can you accept Gerim nowadays? How can we at the CRC, how can we accept Gerim? We don't have Korbanos nowadays. So the Gemara points out, there's a pasuk, V'chi yagor itchem ger, asher v'sochechem lidoroseichem. That we quoted a pasuk, kachem kager, that teaches us that whatever was done to our forefathers, that's the process that we do with convert converts nowadays. There's another pasuk. It says, the Vigomer is the most important part. It says, for all generations, you're going to be able to accept converts. The Torah tells us that something we'll be able to do all generations. That's how we at the CRC know that we can perform conversions. Because we were told, Lidoroseichem, it's going to be for all generations. So since there are generations where you can't bring a korban, it must be the korban is not miyakev. If the korban is not miyakev, what's the purpose of the korban? It's a mitzvah. A ger is a mitzvah to bring a korban. The Avner Nesa says that the base of Mikdash is built tomorrow, or the gerim remain gerim, but they have to bring korbanos. They weren't able to fulfill this mitzvah before, and they'll fulfill the mitzvah afterwards. They're still gerim. It's one opinion that says, no, they won't be gerim. The gerim will be suspended until they bring a korban. Pashtus is not that way. Pashtus is once they're gerim, they're completely gerim, but they have a mitzvah to bring a korban, which they can't fulfill that mitzvah today.
You're saying that people who believe they have to bring one, if there was a way to make that, you're saying it's a condition of conversion. You're just saying it's a mitzvah upon a ger to do that.
It's a mitzvah upon a ger, right, to do that. That's correct. There might be certain things that a ger is obligated to do as a mitzvah, even though it's not a strict prerequisite of what causes the conversion to be valid. But we still have a mitzvah. Yeah, but they have a special mitzvah because they converted. They have a mitzvah because they converted.
It's okay that we don't bring carbon.
No, but we're not converts.
I know, but we have reasons to be obligated to bring carbon.
So that's why Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha put aside some money when he said he has a certain carbon to bring because he flicked the candle on Shabbos, so he has to bring a Chatash Menas, so he put aside some money for the Chatash Menas. That's a discussion as to whether those are carbonos that will have to be bought. There are others that say, no, if the carbonos are not applicable nowadays when the gear converts, so then it has been essentially waived in that particular case. I'm just quoting it to you from the Avnei Nezer. But either way, the Avnei Nezer is saying that we see from this sugya that the korban was never prerequisite. It was something they were obligated to do, but it's not a prerequisite. Okay, that's how you can understand it anyway. So that's one component. So these are important components. So we learn from what happened, the Ma'aman Har Sinai, that there's a need for Mila, and we learn that there's a need for Tefillah, and the korban that could be set aside. What about Bezdin? Where do we come up with the idea that the Geiris requires the Bezdin? That's not found explicitly in the Gemara over there. So that's the Sugya in Yevamos and Daf Mem Bavam and Beis that talks about how there was that Uvda Avabe Rabbi Chia Barebi that they brought together a group of rabbis for purposes of performing a conversion, and they didn't perform it until they kept on putting it off until there were three rabbis available. So it says the Gemara, Shema Mina Ger Tzarek Shlosha. We learn from this that a Ger requires a Bezdin. What's a Bezdin? A Bezdin is three Dayanim. So how do I know what's the source for that? So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Chiyam Barabam Rabbi Yochanan Ger Tzarek Gimel Mishpach Sibbei. Because it says in Mishpah Echad Yeh Lachem V'Lager, it says that you are governed by the same Torah as a ger, as a convert. So we learn that from Mishpah, Mishpah means it's like a din, it's like a court proceeding. A court proceeding requires a court. It requires the Bezdin. So this is how we know that the Geiris requires the Bezdin. Now I'll ask you a question. You said the Mila and the Tefillah, we know are required because that took place at Har Sinai. I have a Xeris HaKosov, the Mishpat Sibbe, that teaches me that you need a Bezdin. But shouldn't we say that if that is an indispensable part of the Geiris, that there must have been a Bezdin at Ma'amad Har Sinai? So where was the Bezdin at Ma'amad Har Sinai? Why is it that we're requiring a Bezdin if there was no Bezdin when the Klal Yisrael originally were given the Torah?
Who says there was no Bezdin?
So who says there was no Bezdin?
You have a Bezdin of three, or so, should be the Bezdin?
So the question is, what does the Bezdin represent? What does the Bezdin represent? So if you turn to page 2 for a second, on the section, role of Bezdin and ramifications, so you have two different approaches about what the Bezdin represents. You have Rav Soloveitchik. Rav Soloveitchik in his Sefer Alot Tshuva, so he says that the Bezdin is miyatzik ba kiviyachol es hashchina. That there was a Shekhinah. At Har Sinai, there was the Shekhinah, the Divine Presence was present at Har Shekhinah, at Har Sinai. So nowadays, when the Ger does not have all of the lightning bolts and the thunder, and the thunderstorms, that accompany the giving of the Torah at Har Sinai, doesn't have the clear and unmistakable presence of the Giloy Shekhinah at Har Sinai, so that has to be replaced. How is the Giloy Shekhinah replaced? It's replaced through the mechanism of Elokim Nitzav Badas Kel Bekerav Elokim Yishpot, through the Bezdin serving as the representatives of the Shekhinah. The second approach is the approach that you find hinted at. The Bezdin, right, the Bezdin brings the Shekhinah, you can say. The Bezdin brings the Shekhinah. Okay. And then you have the second approach, which is hinted at in the Beis Halevi al HaTorah in Parshas Lech Lecha, when he talks about when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Avram, Ani I neighbor, you see, it's called Yisrael Avram Mon Goyim, that you are going to be a father of all nations. So, Gila Lo, Demi'atu, Mishiyirtzili, Kane Simi Beris. So, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, passed the baton to Avram. He said, whenever anybody in the future wants to come into the bris of Klal Yisrael, Tiyah Taha Morsha, you're going to be, I'm giving you power of attorney. That you are going to serve in that capacity. What was the capacity of Avraham? Avraham was the progenitor of a Klal Yisrael. And he was saying to Avraham that you're going to serve in the capacity I'm giving you as the representative of the future of Klal Yisrael, the ability to bring in Gerim into the midst of Klal Yisrael. Let's continue. And this is the source for that which it says in the Gemara, that you're going to require three dayanim for the geiris to be valid. Look at the second to last line. Because you need the two different sides of the covenant. If a person converts without the other side of the covenant, there's no covenant that has been made. So therefore, you need representatives of Klal Yisrael. I don't think it's crystal clear, because you could read, conceivably, the Beis Halevi in such a way as saying that the Bezdin is standing in for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. However, it sounds a little bit like he's saying, I'm giving this power to you, Avraham, because you, as the representative body of Klal Yisrael, will be the other side of the covenant. Klal Yisrael is the official nation of God. However, it is the Klal Yisrael that will be entering into this covenant with the prospective Ger. If you're not sure if the Beis Halevi is really saying this, that it's the Beis and represents Klal Yisrael, the Chavos Binyamin of Avishal Yisraeli says it, I think, much more explicitly, where if you take a look in source Yud, turn the page to page 3, okay? And four lines from the bottom, She'ich Yisodi Karya Geirus Ketanai Rishon, Sheklal Yisrael Maskimim Lekabel Oso Lekalom. That the first major condition is that Klal Yisrael has to agree to accept the Ger into its midst. And this is expressed through the Beis Din. So what's the connection then to Har Sinai? The connection is obvious. Who was present in Har Sinai? The totality of Klal Yisrael was present at Har Sinai. So therefore, we're duplicating the Har Sinai experience by bringing the Bezdin into the Geirus process, because the Bezdin is Miyatzig, it represents the totality of Klal Yisrael. So those are the two different perspectives as to the role that the Bezdin plays in terms of duplicating, replicating the Har Sinai experience, as to why this is also a critical component of what is required for gear. Now, question becomes, okay, that's fine and good if I have a Bezdin. But what does it mean to have a Bezdin? A Bezdin is made up, as we've discussed in the past, of three smuchin, of three people who have received genuine smicha. The smicha that we have nowadays is not the genuine smicha that came from Moshe Rabbeinu. It's a new, what we call imitation type of a smicha, netilas rishus. But how then can we presume to serve in the capacity of Bezdin? So there are two different approaches that the Rishonim take to this question. Tosfos asks this question at the end of Maseches Gittin, and Tosfos answers that we say Shlichusaya Kavdinim. We've discussed this in the past, right? That the Bezdin of today, they're the Shluchim, the Shlichusaya, the Kamai Kavdinim. They're the Shluchim, the representatives of the Bezdin, the Dayanim of yesteryear. And we see from here, it says in the Sivas HaMishpah, at the beginning of Choshen Mishpah, we see from here that the concept of Shlichusaya Kavdinim must be a concept on a Daraisa level. It must work on a Daraisa level, because otherwise we're not going to be arguing that our Gerim, that all the people who convert to Judaism nowadays, are only converting on a Rabbanan level. It can't be that they're only on a Daraisa level, they're really non-Jewish, it's just Rabbanan, we say they're Jewish, how can we marry them and treat them as Jewish in all other respects? It doesn't make any sense. So he says, we see from here that Shlichusaya must work on a Daraisa level. However, others like the Ramban and the Rashba say, no, Shlichusaya does not work on a Daraisa level, it works on a Darabanan level. So then how do they explain how you can be Mekabel Gerim Bizman Hazeh? So the Rashba says, and you find this in Tosfos and Kiddushin as this idea as well, it's not the Tosfos we were quoting was at the end of Gittin, this is Tosfos and Kiddushin, says, you know how that original Gemara asked, how can we accept the Gerim nowadays without a Korban? And the Gemara answered, well, the Pasuk with respect to Gerim says, L'dorosichem, L'chiyagoritchem ger shebesochichem, L'dorosichem. That teaches me that it must work. It's the Torah is telling us, however it's going to be, it's going to work, because I'm telling you that this is something that will always be possible for all generations. So says Tosfos and the Rashba, Tosfos and Kiddushin and the Rashba, they say that the Dorosichem therefore is teaching me that it can't be that Geirus requires smuchin. It doesn't require smuchin. Because if it would require smuchin, then it wouldn't be the Dorosichem, because there's a point in time that after the Chorban Abayis where smicha was going to be running out, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu clearly is speaking for all generations, knowing that smicha is going to run out at some point, Hashem is telling us, even when smicha runs out, you're still going to be able to perform Geirus. So how does that work? So he says, clearly, the notion of the Bezdin being smuchin is not likuba. Even if the Bezdin is not smuchin, even if you have three anashim kasherim, like Ramosha Feinstein writes, you don't need anybody to be a rav, says Ramosha Feinstein. I have three anashim kasherim. I have three kosher Jews, meaning three Jews who are qualified to serve as a dayanim in terms of their religious observance and their integrity. Then they haven't been disqualified through a beirus or anything of that sort. They have a relatively good name, etc. So then they would be qualified to serve as dayanim, and this could explain how we could do geiris bizman hazeh, even if our smicha credentials are not impeccable. So you have Tosfos. Tosfos says that no, you need the credentials, but the credentials work. It's actually Kusayel de Kamaika of Dinan, that we're considered to be the rabbis of today, are considered to be the heirs or the agents of the rabbis of yesteryear. And then you have the other approach, which says, no, it turns out, what do you know, that you don't need smuchin after all. So which opinion do we follow? So it's very interesting. So Ramoshe assumed that even if you don't have smuchin altogether, you bring a balabas, you know, you would have this with the small town rabbis who would perform their own geirus. So they were a rabbi themselves, and they bring in the chazan to be the second dayan. They bring in some from balabas to be the third dayan. Moshe assumes that's perfectly fine. You find more and more poskim nowadays who say that why should we completely disregard the opinion of Tosfos? That we really should be on the safe side, in order to ensure that we're performing the geiris in a fashion that works for Kol HaDeos, and that we should ensure that all of the members of the Beis Din have proper smicha, that they all should have a proper smicha, that that should be one of the prerequisites of serving as a dayan. So when we have our own Batei Din nowadays performing conversions, all of the dayanim who are serving in the capacity of the Beis Din are certified dayanim. So we try to be as l'chatzchila, we try to be as ideal in our performance of the mitzvah as we can possibly be. But this is an important question, because obviously we are performing conversions nowadays. We have to make sure that we have satisfied all of the prerequisites.
Yes. Like, I've done HaTorah Sedorim before by first alone. He's on Mutter. Is there such a thing as a Beis Din of one?
We speak about in terms of a mumcha, if you have a mumcha that they could sometimes service. There's a whole question with respect to different types of cases, when that would be acceptable and when that wouldn't be acceptable. Pashtus in the Gemara is that we are requiring that Mishpach, that the Beis Din Sarek Gimel, Mishpach Sibbei, that there's a special need to have three dayanim, that this is not like some type of a monetary case where we sometimes will content ourselves with one dayan, that we require what we call a Beis Din Mehudar. This has to be a Beis Din Mehudar where there are three dayanim who are established to stand in, especially, you know, to say that this is Bekerav Elokim Nishpot, which is generally understood to stand for three, right? You know that the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, Minayan, you know that the Shekhinah Shaira, even on three people, you know, are sitting and learning Torah, because it says Bekerav Elokim Nishpot. That the Pashtus is that we're dealing with three dayanim. Okay, that's the number when we're speaking about the magical number in order to serve as the representatives of the Shekhinah, that you need to have three dayanim. It could be that that's an afkamina. If we were dealing with a bezin that didn't have to serve in that very lofty capacity of the Kerav HaLakim Yishpot, so maybe you could get away with one, and maybe that explains why nobody speaks about having a bezin of only one. But then the question is, to what degree is this necessarily miyakev? When we say that you require a Beis Din, let's say b'diyeved you didn't have a Beis Din. So there's a machlokis about whether if you didn't have a Beis Din for the tefillah, for the immersion, would the conversion still be good? In other words, there are different components. We just said, right now we're up to three components, right? We have the Mila, we have the tefillah, and we have the Beis Din, all right? So, are there any other components? Do we miss anything
yet?
The korban we already dispensed with. We said that's not going to be miyakid. Do we miss anything?
Kabbalah
so mitzvos. So this is the ikar chasim in a sefer so far. The Gemara increases didn't talk about Kabbalah so mitzvos, and this particular Gemara in Yevamos didn't speak about Kabbalah so mitzvos. So where did Kabbalah so mitzvos then come into the picture? So that's where Rus comes into the picture. So Gemara in Yevamos goes on and says that you have to give a smattering of mitzvos kalos for chamuros that you have to share, like we see in the conversation in Amiyai with Rus, where they spoke about where the Jew is supposed to be buried, and they spoke about the mitzvos, amechamir elokai kalokai. So here's where we see that they're supposed to be shared a hodas hamitzvos. And yet at the same time, the Rambam does not explicitly say that this is one of the components of geirus. So the question is, why does the Rambam not explicitly say that it's one of the components of geirus? And Rabbi Tzalo Zsolti, you see in Source Yud Beis, Rabbi Tzalo Zsolti has an extensive essay in the journal Torah Sheba'al Peh about this particular topic, and he comes to the conclusion, the reason why it is not explicitly mentioned is for the simple reason that it is a prerequisite for the entire process. In other words, there are the ritual components of performing the geirus. When somebody is eligible for geirus, you gotta do mila, and you gotta do tefillah, and you gotta do it in front of a Beis Din. But then, there's the prerequisite of what the essence of geirus is all about. And it says, the essence of geirus is all about the Kabbalah's o mitzvos. If you don't have the Kabbalah's o mitzvos, so then, you don't have anything. Now, what's interesting is that the Rambam doesn't say that it's miakev per se, but he just says when a ger is ready, likanis takas kanafei shkina, and to be makabel on himself or the ol of the Torah, so then he has to go through milah and tevila. So says Rabbi Tzal Zolti, it's an introduction because we wouldn't get to first base if you didn't have the Kabbalah so mitzvos, because of the fact that it's so much an essential part of the mitzvah. But in Perek Yudalit of Hilchos Yisuri Bia, the Rambam says something very interesting. The Rambam says, oh, by the way, if you didn't mention, if you forgot to discuss all of the different mitzvos, to do the Hodas HaMitzvos, or two of the Ger, so then the Geris is still going to be valid. So the question is, what do you mean? You forgot to do the Hodas HaMitzvos, you forgot to inform the Ger of the various mitzvos that the Ger is supposed to perform, even mention any mitzvos to the Ger, then the Geris is still valid. That sounds like the Kabbalah of mitzvos is not necessarily Me'akev. So there's a famous comment by Shlomo of Lipschitz, the Chemda Shlomo. The Chemda Shlomo, who's not necessarily so well known to everybody as a posek when it comes to other matters, but he said something that was pretty much accepted by everybody mainstream when it comes to the explanation of how we understand the Rambam, who says that Hodas HaMitzvos is not Miakev. He says that we draw a chiluk, we draw a distinction between Kabbalah HaMitzvos and Hodas HaMitzvos. He says, Hodas HaMitzvos, I forgot to inform the Ger about the various mitzvos. That's not Miakiv. I was supposed to do that, but it's not Miakiv, the validity of the Gerus. However, if he didn't do a Kabbalah HaMitzvos, so that is Miakiv, the Gerus. Why would I have this distinction between Hodas HaMitzvos and Kabbalah HaMitzvos? So you'll say, I understand on a fundamental level. I need somebody to accept upon themselves the yoke of commandments. They don't necessarily have to know what the yoke of commandments is. They just have to say, whatever it is, that I'm going to accept it upon myself. But if you didn't inform them of everything, or you didn't inform them of anything, so that's okay, because the main thing is that the commitment has to be there, even if the knowledge is not there. The commitment's going to be better if it's accompanied by knowledge, but it's still going to be about commitment. And where do we derive this from? Let's go back again. Naseh v'nishma. So Soloveitchik said that even though the Gemara didn't explicitly bring this application of the Geirus process at Har Sinai for our purposes, this is almost the most self-evident one, which is what was the highlight and what was the cornerstone of the Matan Torah experience. It was B'nai Yisrael getting together and saying, Naseh V'nishma. You couldn't have Kabbalah Torah, you couldn't have Matan Torah without the Naseh V'nishma, without their acceptance of the yoke of commandments. So therefore he says that this is why we have this requirement as a part and parcel of the Geirus, that to be Kabbalah's own mitzvos, because this was the very heart and essence of the Matan Torah Har Sinai experience, was B'nai Yisrael saying, one second, Naseh V'nishma. And this also provides us with the conceptual underpinnings of the Chemda Shlomo, which is where does he get this idea that you don't need to know the mitzvahs, you just have to accept it. That was what Matan Torah was all about. It wasn't about clearly they didn't go into depth into all the 613 mitzvahs. It was really just, you know, Naseh V'nishma. They heard the Ten Commandments. It wasn't, you know, a full-fledged educational yeshiva experience. The main essence was that they're saying, Naseh V'nishma, we are prepared to accept upon ourselves whatever it is that you tell us, without necessarily knowing what the full range of mitzvahs was going to be. So that shows us that Kabbalah's O mitzvahs is in fact a miyake. Now, there are those who disagree with this distinction of the Chemda Shlomo and say, no, that maybe Kabbalah's O mitzvahs we see is not necessarily such a miyake. That is really, certainly, to read that within the Rambam is extremely difficult. But even if you would read that within the, because the Rambam seems to say in a number of different places that he just says matter-of-factly, oh yes, somebody becomes a ger, that means they have to be Kabbalah's O mitzvahs. You can't reject a particular mitzvah. You have to accept all of them. The Gemara in Becholos says if somebody comes along and says I'll accept all the 613 mitzvahs, sans one, so then you can't accept them. So clearly, Kabbalah's O mitzvahs is pretty basic, and the Shulchan Aruch, anyway, to dispel any other doubt, the Shulchan Aruch paskins that there is a need for Kabbalah Sol Mitzvos, and not only that, but the Kabbalah Sol Mitzvos is the most important part of the Geirus process that has to take place in front of the Beis Din. It's the most important process that has to take place in front of the Beis Din. So just to review, and then we'll take your question, just to review, so we have these four different components. We have Mila, okay? We have Tevila. We have the requirement for a Beis Din. We have the requirement for Kabbalah Sol Mitzvos. The two that are going to be the trickiest from our perspective in terms of contemporary conversion issues are going to be, number one, defining the Beis Din. What does the Beis Din have to consist of? So we already mentioned the machlokas, whether you need to trigger the principle of Shlichus Sayu, or whether just any Gimel Anashim Ksheirim are going to be good enough, whether in a perfect world you require Smukin and we have to figure out how to duplicate the Smukin, or whether you don't need the Smukin altogether. Then, you know, the next question becomes, so how responsible does the Beis Din have to be in terms of their general credentials? And then you have Kabbalah Sol Mitzvos, which obviously is a minefield in its own right. What are the necessary parameters of defining when there has been a sincere acceptance of mitzvos? Let's say that the ger is standing in the mikvah about to immerse, and you ask the ger, are you accepting upon yourself the yoke of commandments? And the ger says, sure thing, ready to go. And then the ger goes inside the mikvah, comes out of the mikvah, says, ha ha, fooled you guys, but now I'm Jewish and I can do whatever I want. And he runs out, the geiris took place on Friday, and then he runs out and he drives on Friday night to the local McDonald's and eats a cheeseburger, and it happens to be December 25th, and he comes home and he lights an Xmas tree. So what then? Do you say that the geiris was still valid because he said, gave lip service to Kabbalah Sol Mitzvos? So this is a source of tremendous discussion, Bizman HaZeh. What happens when somebody converts and then you discover shortly afterwards that they're not really keeping anything? If you take a look at Rav Moshe Feinstein here, it's the source above, at the very bottom of the page. So Moshe Feinstein says he has a Kabbalah, you turn over to the top of page 2, the ger, I don't know how the word she'ein came in here, it should be she'anan, the ger she'anan sadi shlo kibbel mitzvos, akshe kibbel befiv, that we are able to testify, we know based on the ger's conduct that he did not really accept the mitzvos, even though he said he was accepting the mitzvos. And somebody asked Ramoshe, is this person a ger or not? And Ramoshe is very decisive and definitive about this. He says, first line, middle, Pashut Ubarish Eino Ger Klal Apidiyevin. Obviously, it doesn't work. V'chein Hora Abba Mori Hagon. How often do you see Ramoshe quoting his father? Only when he's saying, you're not allowed to argue with me on this one, because my father told me. Halacha L'maisei B'uvda Kazusha Eino Ger Klal Bein L'Kula Bein L'Chumra, not considered to be a ger. Shekabos Mitzvos Beger Me'akev Ve'afi Momen B'Pishim Mekab Mitzvos Yibaran Sadi. If it's clear as a crystal ball that She Eino Mekab Olav Ve'emes Eino Klum. It's we know from the person's behavior that the whole thing was a sham and a fraud, so then it does not count for anything. It does not count for anything. So this is extremely, look at certainly the Lashon of Moshe, this is a non-negotiable point with respect to the Kabbalah Sol Mitzvos. The question is, how far do you extend this principle of Moshe? What's considered to be an absolute fraud and sham? Let's say the person basically is going to Shul on Shabbos, but they're driving to Shul on Shabbos. So is that a sham? If they're lighting candles, they're making Kiddush, but they're driving to Shul, where do you draw the line exactly? Or do you say it's a sham, you know, only the case where the person says, ha ha ha, fooled you, and now I'm going to do all the Averus, and they're not observing anything, and they're lighting, you know, their Kratzmach tree. You know, so that's the question. Question, yeah.
But the Nasav Nishma was just on Torah Shebiksav. We were coerced. We didn't accept the Torah Shebaal Peh with Har Kegigis. And not until Purim time, Kimu V'Kiblu. So we can say that the person doesn't have to accept the Torah Shebaal Peh for a valid conversion.
It's a very good. It's a very good question. What did the Nasav Nishma cover? And there were all kinds of different answers, because after all, we have a tradition, Kafalei Har Kegigis. That, of course, is a Medrash Chazal. which is based on Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahar, that we learn from that couple in Ahar Kigigis, 100%. The question is, to what degree do you take that Medrash Chazal, do you turn that into the halakhic discussion? Meaning the Gemara doesn't seem to differentiate, you know, between the Kabbalah one way or another way. I mean, we do have the idea of Kimu Bekiblu, Kimu Masha Kiblu Kfar, but to say, to go so far as to say that the couple Amahar Kigigis means that there was no meaningful Kabbalah with respect to Torah Shebaal Peh. It's a Medrash Tanchuma. Medrash Tanchuma says they accepted Torah Shebaal Peh willingly, but Torah Shebaal Peh. It could be that Torah Shebaal Peh. I'm sorry? Modar Rabbi Gilda Raisa. There's no question about it. But that's going on everything. That's going in everything. What does the Meshech Chokhma say? Meshech Chokhma says Modar Rabbi Leraisa means that there was a forced acceptance of everything. Of everything there was a forced acceptance. But what is the forced acceptance? It means that the Giloy Shechino was so incredibly strong that there was no way in the world that anybody wouldn't willingly accept the Torah at that point in time. That's what it means. That it was forced in the sense that there was no Bechira Charshis, because who wouldn't accept the Torah when they had such a high level of Giloy Shechino? So do you consider that to be insincerity? It was sincere. It's just saying that they didn't necessarily have the same challenges and temptations that your average person would have when presented with Kabbalah Satova. To say that that wouldn't constitute a Kabbalah, that's a different story. If we take it literally and say, no, they really, like the Medrash Tanchuma says, they were really coerced with respect to Torah Shebaal Peh, so then you have to understand what's the nature of the coercion. It could be that sometimes, you know, you pressure somebody into doing something which they deep down want to do. Meaning this was the group of people that was designated by a Kodesh Baruch Hu to constitute the original Klal Yisrael. So that means is that they really wanted to accept the Torah. Maybe they needed a little bit of extra nudging. But somebody who's coming from outside of Klal Yisrael and they're entering into the nation, you don't necessarily have that same umdana that if they're not doing it willingly, that deep down they really want to do it. So therefore, you can't necessarily analogize in that respect when it comes to this particular discussion, although it is a very, very good question. Okay.
That's just the definition of Western logic. I mean, it says, you know, Miguel Gala Raza Zed, right? Because in the Goyim, Mali Gala Raza Zed, it's not a logical thing. So, I mean, Rus is maybe the model, not just for the fact that you have to discourage three times, but also for the sincerity. In other words, the only reason you do something for logical is because there's a strong love. It's Av Kabein, not like Evan.
You're saying that just like sometimes we have Psukim in Yecheskel that enable us to understand Psukim in the Torah better. So we have Megillas Ros to enable us to understand how do we apply this Naseh Menishma principle in practice before generations following Matan Torah. That it be a more thought out, more considered, you know, type of commitment under, say, normal circumstances, not dealing with this grandiose experience at Har Sinai. Because you need to have, obviously, not only the Kabbalah mitzvahs that existed then, but you need to have the requisite sincerity. So how do you go about making sure that this is carried over properly for all generations? So I hear the point. Yes, I don't want to take everybody past the time, because I know that we're already past the 1 hour point.
What if they think they're sincere, and they convert, and they realize they were under some kind of mental issue,
so we're going to discuss that. We're going to discuss the mental issues as well. What I wanted to do today was really just to set the table in terms of two things. Number one, the general mitzvah of Avtem et Sagir as to the mitzvah component of making sure that we are doing conversions properly and treating the converts properly. And number two, to discuss what are the basic elements of the Geirus process and how do we go about ensuring that those prerequisites are met nowadays. Mirz Hashem, there's plenty of other things to talk about. Okay, this is just a launching pad for further discussion. Mirz Hashem, after Shavuos, Od Chazon Amoed.
Thank you. Thank you.